Twofootedtackle.com.
Yes, it's the last Two-Footed Tackle podcast of 2010. Just like Sergio Ramos and Xavi Alonso, this pod will be resting until the new year, but we'll still be discussing all the hot footballing topics. So, water bottles, watch out. Arsene Wenger's about. No bragging rights for the Gunners this week as we chat all things Premier League and the Champions League. Plus, MLS, Samuel Eto'o channeling the spirit of Zinedine Zidane, and a topic that Jack Warner will probably claim not to lose any sleep over. All that and more on the Two-Footed Tackle podcast. So hello, yes, this is the Two-Footed Tackle podcast. I am Gary Andrews and we've got an all-star lineup as we say goodbye to 2010, starting with Two-Footed Tackle editor Chris Nee. Hi Chris. Now for anyone who wasn't listening last week, can you explain why we're talking about the last pod of the year in November?
We've lost use of the studio because I'm changing jobs. So I've let down the London blogging fraternity by making a decision that was based professionally rather than on a podcast. Sorry, everyone.
How very dare you?
I'm sure we'll find some way of working around it.
Yes. Yeah, so, dear listeners, we will try and keep you entertained between now and then, but I'm sure we will find something or the other. But, you know, keep yourself entertained until 2010. And hey, you've still got a podcast to come. So anyway, joining Chris for this week for a bumper pod, a man who retains his cheerful demeanour, even though he has to watch West Ham every week, Lee Harvey. Hello, Lee.
How are you doing, Gary?
I'm very well. How are you?
Other than football, all right.
Excellent. Is that a West Ham tie?
It's not a West Ham tie. It's Italian, though. I think I killed Alan Pardew and got it off him. He used to wear this tie, or ties like this all the time.
Okay. It's the smartest pod we've ever had, because we have another man with a tie on in here, which has never happened before. No ties ever on this pod. Anyway, here on Two for the Tackle, we're keen to promote exciting young blogging talent onto the pod. So, from a girl who loves the Gunners, the Jack Wilshere of the pod, if you will. NOPA award nominee, Sian Ranscombe. Hi, Sian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Not bad. I'm pretty pleased to be being compared to Jack Wilshere. About the same height, I think that's about.
Excellent. How are your skills with the ball at feet?
I'm almost as good at tackling as he is.
Fantastic. That's good to hear. And rounding it all off, the wise old head of pod favourite, the man who makes it his mission to log every football fail on the internet.
Whoa. Wise old head. What the dickens?
Wise?
I'm in my young 30s, mid-30s, okay, maybe late 30s.
Okay, I'm 29. Chris?
26.
21.
Oh,
Jesus. As you were.
Ollie Irish, ladies and gentlemen, from Who Ate All the Pies. Now, Ollie, this is the last pod. Who Ate All the Pies? I've often made reference to pie stuff, and this is the last pod. And this is Christmas. I have a surprise. Hang on.
Oh,
here we go.
Wow.
Mince pies for the pod at various points.
can I describe them? They're not just any mince pies. They're Mr. Kipling. They're exceedingly good mince pies.
I don't even like mince pies.
You've just ruined it.
And there'll be one extra. Well, two.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, finally got pies.
We finally have got pies. Not the meaty type, but, you know. I'd like to point out other mince pies are available from assorted stores. Anyway,
still haven't been sent pies by Glossop North End. I'm very offended by that.
Yeah, maybe we can get that for the new year. They have said, keep bragging, how good their pies up at Glossop. And I'd love to try one. I'd love to try one from Norwich as well. Anyway, pie chat to one side. Let's start with the Premier League. Several big results at the weekend. The obvious place to start is the Emirates. Spurs secured their first North London derby victory on their rivals' patch for 17 years. Sian, obviously we all know where your allegiances lie on this one. So what went wrong for Arsenal?
I was leaving the stadium on Saturday and I thought, I know exactly what they're going to ask me, and I'm going to say I don't know, because no one knows. It was, I mean, I hate footballing cliches, but come on, a game of two halves or what? I mean, the first half I thought we killed them, I think. Yes? Yes.
Yeah. And then, you did.
And then
you almost killed us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Even at 2-0, Arsenal were never clearly never safe. But I don't know what went on in the changing rooms at half time, whatever Harry did, because we just fell to bits. And the thing is with Arsenal, when they score, when we concede one, you kind of think, yeah, we're probably going to lose now.
And in terms of Arsenal, though, do you think there was perhaps a bit of complacency at 2-0 up? Because there are a few sort of chances. Schumacher looked a little bit casual in front of goal. Arshavin looked a little bit casual.
I don't know about complacent, because if you look at the performance, there was no one you could say, you were rubbish. It was just, it was like they just collapsed. It was, I mean, the whole stadium was stunned, especially that little corner of the away fans, I think, had to admit. And then Cesc, obviously, with the handball in the free kick, was suicide. But
can we talk about this for the whole
actually, yeah, I totally agree with that. This didn't just cover any other football.
The whole game, or just the comedy handball?
Well, as Sean says, after half time, I was literally thinking Arsenal are going to win the league, because I'd not seen them play that well for ages. I was thinking their team looks fantastic, playing brilliantly. Nazri has just developed into a superstar. Fabregas was playing well. Shamak settled very quickly. They were just playing really, really well. And we were slaughtered in the first half, and we were probably lucky to only be 2-0 down.
Yeah.
And then I think Harry got his ghetto blaster out, played maybe Now Dance 91 at half time, bought on Jermaine Defoe. And were it not for Fabregas and Shamak raising their hands at that free kick, which was madness gone mad.
This is the debate though, who raised whose hand? There was an argument that Cesc was trying to put Shamak's hand down. I think that's
that is
a bit excessive, but yeah.
Maybe they're just holding each other's hands, you know.
Have you seen the photoshopped photo of the
I haven't, but I would very much like to.
They're all holding handbags.
Oh, bless them.
It happens. I mean, overall, it was just a brilliant... I mean, obviously, we're biased, but it was a brilliant game of football.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the best games of the season Premier League so far.
So, Harry Redknapp, tactical genius.
Well, he... was it Van der Vaart admitted that Harry just doesn't really do that much tactically? He, you know... nothing's really come from the training ground. He just says, "Terrific, you know, get on with it," and they get on with it. Bringing Defoe on really stretched Arsenal's central defence. And as has been pointed out, he was running into the channels a lot and really stretching Arsenal's back four in a way they weren't in the first half. Because Pavlyuchenko and Crouch are very predictable players to defend against, I think. So, I mean, Defoe coming on made a difference, but then I think any manager would have brought on Defoe at half-time, I don't think. And I like the fact that Harry says, you know, it wasn't really me, I'm not a tactical genius. I find that quite refreshing.
Good job. He's not going for the England manager's job or anything like that.
Exactly.
Sean, just very quickly to finish off on Arsenal, what's your opinion on Arsenal's defence on the back line? Because we've had a lot of people on here, Arsenal fans and otherwise, talking about Fabianski, who, you know, people seem to fall in and out of love with at the moment every week. You've got sort of defence in front, which is lacking for Marlon. Do you think it's strong enough, or do you think Wenger needs to strengthen there?
I think the trouble we've had this season so far, Fabianski's been all right. I mean, last season, our worry was our goalkeeper. He pretty much has been the only one who's had an okay season so far. But we've had a lot of rotation going on in the defence. We've had Giroud was... I think he was on the bench for the Tottenham game.
He was, yeah.
And he had come into the defence when Koscielny was banned. And he'd done pretty well. And a lot of Arsenal fans were saying before the match, when they saw the lineup, why is Koscielny there? I don't think he's as good as Giroud. I know a lot of Arsenal fans would disagree with that. But, yeah, I know... Gael Clichy's not had a great season either, but then he wasn't even playing yesterday, and we had a few defensive errors there as well. It's not... The thing is, people who don't support Arsenal, they always target their defence. That's what they think is the problem with Arsenal. It's not. I think it's something deeper than that, and you can't just blame the defence, I don't think, anyway. But we do need Vermaelen back.
Mm. I would say that it's bordering on professionally negligent to have two central defenders in their first seasons playing together. That just doesn't happen. I mean, with a central defensive pairing, it's all about, if you're new to the Premier League, you need someone to hold your hand and say, this is what you do.
Like Fabregas did to Shamak.
Fabregas did to Shamak. And I think to have Koscielny and Scolacci in together was asking for trouble, really.
Mm. Yeah. Have Spurs released a DVD yet?
Yeah, there's actually going to be a double DVD, like one of those Steven Seagal ones you get with Braga.
Okay.
You know.
You know what? I'd love to see Steven Seagal in Spurs team just for sort of on that. It'd be brilliant mashup.
Have you seen Steven Seagal recently?
No, but I still think that would be brilliant, regardless.
I mean, he looks ridiculous.
When hasn't he? Moving on. Where next? Shall we go to Liverpool West Ham?
Let's not.
So Liverpool. We know now that they clearly have got a little bit of momentum at home. For West Ham, what's going wrong there?
The performance on Saturday was one of the most dismal and awful I've seen for a good couple of years. Well, since when we lost 6-0 on New Year's Day at Reading. I think it was probably one of the worst performances since then. I didn't expect us to go out to Anfield and win. We've not won there since 1963. I didn't even really expect to get a draw out there. But I just want my team to try, and they didn't try. It was awful. There was only one bloke trying out there, and that was Mark Noble. And a Scott Parker like West Ham is not a Scott Parker, not a good West Ham at all. We are basically a one-man team at the moment.
Much as I hate feeding into the whole how long has a manager got, it does seem a fairly obvious question to ask of Avram Grant, especially given that at Birmingham, I think many times your owners, when they were there, have said, we're not going to sack the manager, only to sack the manager, such as Trevor Francis, I think.
When I came in this podcast last week, we just beat Tottenham 1-0, and it was a fantastic performance. It wasn't particularly great football or anything like that, but we put passion in and we got a result. And I thought we honestly turned the corner then. We played Fulham that Saturday, got a point. But I thought, you know, we're starting to progress and starting to do better. Since then, it has been awful. And I'm not one to sort of turn the manager very quickly and say, I'll get rid of him. I stuck with Zola the whole time. We've never wanted him to go. Never really turned on Kerbisi, even though I didn't like the football. I was a bit younger under Pardew, but I still never really wanted him to be sacked. But under Grant, I just can't see us turn the corner unless we change something. This week, we sacked our assistant manager. I'm not even going to attempt to say his full name, Zico Petrovic or something like that. And today we've got Wally Downs in.
Did you see what he said about the Premier League?
I believe he said.
He called it a crap league.
Yes. Apparently, because Avram Grant wasn't at the Stoke game for a Jewish holiday, and when we drew 1-1, and at the half-time interval, instead of giving, when we're 1-0 up, and we haven't won away since Wolves at the start of last season, the assistant manager at the time, that's Zico Petrovic, apparently his team took considered of him cutting his nails. Didn't even try and speak to the team, just sat there and cut his nails.
I like that. That's kind of abstract metaphors. The team talk.
The Stardarism being brought into the world of football management.
There's literally no point in me picking out certain problems. I can. They did a good piece, because I watched a game on ESPN on Saturday, with Steve Lomas pointing out how we've given away so many goals from crosses this season. And it's a ridiculous amount. Just the amount of space and room we've given teams at the back. And I got fed up with it, because, we've had some bad decisions against this year. We should have beat Wolves away when a handball was given against Piquion. He's also playing well for us, may I add.
He's played quite well for you.
Yeah, he has been. He's been a brilliant
signing. He's a good player.
Yeah, I've said after the last time I was on here as well that I thought he'd get about 8 or 9 goals. Mm. But he'll be our top goal scorer this season, and probably...
He's talented.
He works hard as well, and that means a lot. I think West Ham players don't mind not being the greatest player as long as you try hard enough. And he always works his nuts off, basically, every single game.
I think if there was top trumps for Premier League teams, West Ham would be bottom for heart. Apart from Scott Barkley, there's not a lot of heart on your team.
Yeah, Matthew Upson is the worst, one of the worst captains I've seen for a long while. He doesn't control the team whatsoever.
Since the Germany game in the World Cup, he seems to have just...
Well, even towards the end of last season, he wasn't that great. And the papers make a common misconception calling Scott Parker our captain. He might as well be, because Matthew Upson does nothing. He doesn't organise the back line. And as a senior centre-half, like, there was a game last season we lost to Bolton, and Tompkins made a bad mistake, and against Wolves actually last season as well. James Tompkins, a young promising centre-half, made bad mistakes. Matthew Upson didn't go up to him, put a consoling arm around him, try and GM up or anything like that. It was Mark Noble trying to do that, the same sort of age as Tompkins. And it's just, there's a top to bottom, there's problems. And today Carton Cole came out and basically slagged off Avram Grant in the press.
Nice. Well, I mean, you have got West Ham have got Wigan at home at the weekend.
Save our season goal game as the Golden Sullivan.
Well, let's reel out the cliches. 6-pointer.
Yes. Well, if we lose that, and I can't see how they, or if we even draw that, to be honest, the fans have basically turned on Grant.
If you
now.
Lose it, Grant will go.
Yeah. Well, I would hope he would. He said we'd be out of the bottom three by Christmas. And it's not looking that way at the moment. And at the moment, it's looking like we're bottom of the table. And that's not exactly a great position to be at Christmas, as previous teams have shown.
Well, indeed. OK, let's move on to... this is turning into a pod of depression, isn't it? Ewood Park, Blackburn Rovers, Aston Villa. Chris, before we talk about Villa, I've actually been quite impressed with Blackburn in the last few games under Allardyce.
Really? Would
you agree? Yeah, no, seriously. I think
they're getting the job done, aren't they?
They've actually looked like they're able to mix up a little bit more than you'd expect from a big Sam team.
Yeah, you know, they are doing okay. They've had a couple of decent wins lately. I don't particularly rate them any higher than I did, say, this time last year. They've got a couple of good results. They obviously dig in, which is what Sam Allardyce's teams will do. And they're putting away their chances and non-chances in the case of one of the goals on Saturday. So they're getting it done. I don't think they're going to have a particularly impressive season.
They don't score a hell of a lot of goals from open play, do they?
No, and that's going to that's going to limit them over the season. It's worked for them in the last 2 weeks.
He's playing up front for them at the moment, Blackburn, out of pure interest.
Jason Roberts, having been on the bench for a couple of games.
What's happened to that big striker? Is it
Kalinic?
Yeah, that's the fella.
I think he's injured. I think he's got a tweak.
Tweak.
He's got a leg tweak. And he's on the physio's table, so I hear. So, no, but I mean, Gary's got low expectations, I think, when he's saying that relatively they've impressed.
Relatively.
Compared to perhaps the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, they've done okay. Yeah.
I've seen them play a lot worse. Seen them play horrible negative football.
No, I agree with you.
They've opened a little bit up a
They
bit
have.
More.
Pedersen's definitely getting more on the ball than he was perhaps in the last couple of seasons.
Mm. Have you seen the advert that he's done with John Arne Riise for fruit in Norwegian?
No.
This is brilliant. You all need to watch this. This is possibly the best thing on the internet
ever.
It's
up there.
It's not quite...
Hang on, the best thing on the internet ever.
Possibly. Maybe it's not quite as good as... there's a Raymond Dominic advert for poker in France. In which
Why don't
we
have that over here? Like people like Randall, like Ian Holloway do an advert.
That'd be good.
He would.
You'd have to go somewhere to beat the Mick McCarthy gif.
It's really badly auto-tuned anyway, this advert with Pedersen.
So back to the football. Villa, do you think in terms of that Blackburn game, Blackburn are not an easy team to go to, especially when you're a young team that's still finding a way, a lot of injuries in there? Do you think it was a case of that? Do you think Villa will probably be good at home, struggle against teams like Blackburn,
maybe.
Stoke, those kind of teams?
Yeah, maybe. I think there's a certain amount of naivety obviously that comes from having such a young team and loads of injuries. But it wasn't a great performance, but we could have drawn that game. I think we had a chance to have had a penalty. We hit the woodwork. And the goals were down largely to bad goalkeeping and bad defending. So on another day, we might have taken a point or even all three. Just it was one of those days for us, really.
It seems to me that fans like Houllier because he's at least playing your young, talented players like Bannon. And
he's getting some criticism for being very negative, though, and the results are going against him as well, which isn't helping. I personally am very happy with the situation. I think Villa fans have to get... I am.
Oh, you are?
I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that we're going to play more
transition
conservative
sort of
football
season.
And we're not going to get the big results this season.
Finish 10th,
season,
don't
might.
Go down. Bannon gets a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Albrighton gets a lot of experience.
Albrighton is like a terrific player. He's going to be playing for England probably by next season.
Bannon's a great player to watch. I love watching him.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm quite happy with it all, to be honest. I don't expect anything great this season.
If you
I don't
keep
think
young,
we're going to have big
games. I'm not sure.
I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think he's probably gone.
And I think
he's coming to us, isn't he?
Whoa. I thought he was coming to Tottenham.
Oh, I thought he was coming to us.
Yeah,
I thought
to
Ben.
He's not coming to West Ham.
Yeah, probably.
There's only one way to solve that: stone, paper, scissors.
Stone, paper, scissors.
Yeah. For Ashley Young.
Not great for radio.
Wow, Jeremy
Not great for podcasting.
Anyway, moving on. Other teams on there. Team who I actually genuinely have been impressed. Sean, I think you might be as well. Bolton Wanderers. Who destroyed Newcastle at the weekend.
I mean, I only saw the highlights of it, but it looked like the kind of game I would have liked to have seen. Considering Newcastle, well, didn't exactly tear us apart, but still beat us. It was a great game. There was a lot of... I mean, there was two penalties. There was the bizarre handball at the beginning. What's his name? Andy Carroll, he had to get one back for Newcastle, as he always does. But, it was a really good game.
Well, I mean, do you think Bolton genuinely can keep this up this season? They're sitting in fifth. They're, 3 points behind Manchester City? They're playing some attractive football.
Beat Tottenham.
Beat Tottenham, yeah, exactly. Do you see them keeping it up, or do you think it's going to be a case of just fading away?
Well, considering we always used to consider Bolton to be one of those teams that won't play, they'll just kick us. This is, as Arsenal, we think everyone kicks us, but whatever. They've changed it around. I mean, we beat them earlier in the season, but that was earlier in the season.
I think Aaron Coyle is a terrific manager.
Yeah.
He has done a fantastic job up there. Because when West Ham played Bolton all the time, they're our bogey team and have stayed our bogey team. But under Allardyce and Megson, used to be long pumping balls to Kevin Davis. They actually play football now for once. And they play football quite decently. He's got the young South Korean lad.
Chung Yong Lee.
He's a fantastic little player for them. And I think he was bought for nothing really. Very very.
He probably had a better season last season.
Yeah.
I'd say. Mm. But he's Stuart Holden's talking of unsung players is having a really good season.
They even got him on a free transfer, didn't they, Stuart Holden? I think
so. Mm. Yeah. Chris might know that.
Chris is making signs, but he doesn't know quite.
The Dynamo are missing him, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Says Ollie, like he knows what he's talking
I've
about.
I've been following MLS this season, Gary Andrews. How dare you?
Right, we'll test your knowledge in the
please do.
Next part.
I greatly enjoyed the MLS Cup final in Toronto.
Wonderful. I'm very glad to hear it. In which case, before that, I'll warm you up with a nice, easy one. Fulham, Manchester City.
Fulham, Manchester City. Oh, yeah, Manchester City were great, weren't they? Sorry. I've got a Haribo stuck in one half of my mouth. I wondered if Mancini had told his players to go out and, just be slightly more adventurous. But to be honest, Fulham are one of the worst teams in the league under Hughes. So it was. I did predict in a way win there, but I just didn't expect it to be quite that conclusive. Yaya Toure has been something of a revelation, playing that far forward, having played so defensively.
I mean, what was Mancini's thinking on that? Because we've seen it, nobody has really seen him play there throughout his entire career, and now he comes...
He played centre-back for Barcelona when they needed him to play there. But he's actually a really good finisher. Whenever I watch him for Barcelona and he gets into those positions, he's really quite a composed finisher with quite a good shot on him. But Fulham were, in the first half particularly, they were abject, really, really poor. But City could win the league. I'd be very surprised if they did, but I think you'd be pretty brave to predict who was going to win it at this stage of the season because it's so open.
Bolton.
The big question, though...
Except Bolton. Yeah.
The big question is, what on earth is that on Carlos Tevez's neck?
It's a travel pillow, isn't it? It's one of those... He's just not quite inflated this travel pillow quite as much as it could, and it's just to keep... Well, he's got loads of scars on his neck, hasn't he, from that time when he burnt his...
Is that what
it is?
That's
when he was a kid.
I wonder if he enjoys wearing it because it hides his scars.
But then there's kind of the trend of it. Have you seen Ad Boyle? Shamak has a daft thing on his
neck. Wasn't the first player to do it? Rona Bianchi. In England, I'm talking about.
Playing
for Man City, I think. Yeah, he used to wear like a massive scarf. I seem to remember him scoring away to Tottenham, actually.
Shamak's neckwear gives him the air of this sort of greasy giraffe. He's got very... very long neck, hasn't he, Shamak?
Just a neckwear, though.
He looks like he's been wearing rings to lengthen his neck.
He looks like... I always thought, before he came to Arsenal even, I thought he looked like the love child of Cristiano Ronaldo and Benjamin Bratt, actor.
It's a very good call.
My friend used to go out with Benjamin Bratt.
Really?
I digress, yeah. Wow.
Blimey. Touched anyway, 6 degrees of separation on this pod. I'm sure somebody tweeted at me that I think they saw Francesco Totti once playing an actual scarf, which really wouldn't surprise me at all.
Tevez's neckwear is ridiculous. I'm sure it contravenes Premier League regulations.
I wonder if it's Mancini's orders that all his players should gradually be wearing scarves.
Vialli used to wear a scarf around his arm, didn't he, at Juve, when he was captain?
Gianluca Vialli did.
Sure. Wasn't that just the captain's arm?
Yeah,
then?
No, I'm sure he did.
That's
it was a substitute
Italian
for it.
That's a very Italian thing, though, isn't it, wearing scarves around your wrist?
Yeah, I see. Apparently, Fenio wore an American scarf once when he was playing for us around his captain's armband.
You've joined us halfway through scarf chat.
Twofootedtackle.com, bringing you the games that matter. Chris, this is actually completely unintentional that I've come to you with a Birmingham question. I just realised that I was about to ask. But Birmingham 1, Chelsea 0. Fantastic action from the Blues rearguard there, especially Ben Foster, to keep it level. I mean, people will say that Chelsea are, in some kind of crisis, and there's clearly something a bit odd going on behind the scenes there. But for all that, on another day, that could have been a Chelsea victory.
Yeah, all down to Ben Foster for me. I don't particularly rate him as an international quality goalkeeper, but week by week, he's gradually proven me wrong at the moment, which is slightly saddening, but it's good to see an English goalkeeper going out and doing the business. He kept it down to zero when it could have been 6 or 7, frankly. Blues were okay at the back, but it was mostly down to him. Took their one chance. It was a good knockdown from Cameron Jerome, fueling the debate about whether he should be in the England squad. Lee Bowie put it away, and then they just held on. It's a very decent performance, and I'm sure they'll do something very similar to us next week.
Bowie hasn't been getting a starting role as much this season.
He came in because Craig Gardner's...
I wonder if that is going to convince Big Ek that actually Bowyer was kind of important in last season's good run, because he played really well last season.
It was acres of space for the goals.
A composed finish. It's one of those horrible finishes where you know you're going to have a chance against Czech, probably perhaps the only really good chance you might get, and he really just stroked in. Really good.
No issues.
Elsewhere in the Premier League, where should we go next? Blackpool, Lee. Prince William watching that one. Do you think he would have been impressed with what he saw from Ian Holloway's team?
Yeah, well, I watched it on stream at some point, waiting for the West Ham game to come on. And they were really impressive, Blackpool. I was quite surprised. I've watched them against us the week before, and I actually turned around half of the game and said, you know what, I was disappointed with the result, obviously, but I went, they're actually a team that come and try and play football. They're not lob the ball up. They actually try and knock the ball around quite a bit. And I watched that game on Saturday, and they really impressed me. It was a great game. Wolves were quite good as well. I'm surprised it ended up 2-1, because it could have been a good 4-3 game, because there was tons of chances. Luke Varney's goal was a fantastic finish. And I'm not so much smiling Harewoods, but
scruffy is the only word for that, isn't it?
But it was a great game. Really, I was very impressed by Blackpool.
And then going back, Sean, Manchester United. Do you think they're a good team or not? They're level up the top. And how much can you read into a 2-0 win over a 9-man Wigan?
They keep grinding these results out, don't they? And that's the thing about the league this year. Chelsea keep slipping up. They keep hanging in there. And another team, Arsenal, that could be capitalising on that aren't. But I think they're going to be fine. They were two men down, but they both deserved to go off, didn't they?
Definitely. Rod Allega as well.
Both of them.
And
then
one he was saying it's a dive, and it clearly wasn't a dive.
Because Rod Allega won't be playing against us this weekend.
Do you think that's the difference between Manchester United and Arsenal? That Arsenal can play well, but they concede and they start looking wobbly. You couldn't see Manchester United throwing away a 2-goal lead, no matter how poorly they're playing.
No, and a couple of weeks ago, they scored in the last minute, which used to be their hallmark. It became our hallmark last season, and now it's back to being theirs again.
I think that was against Aston Villa, Sean.
Oh, was it? Sorry.
Having been
it wasn't quite the last minute as well, was it? It was like 84th and 86th or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not quite as good as Exeter's wonderful comeback against Oldham. Midweek, just thought I'd put that in there. They were three-nil down with 13 minutes to play.
This is the Premier League section, I felt like.
I think I'm allowed to just eulogise a little bit. And three goals scored in the last 13 minutes to take it back to 3-3. Daniel Nardiello getting, who I think Ollie might remember from a Plymouth Exeter game a couple of weeks ago.
I remember her very well from this life. TV series about a group of young lawyers. I think I'm getting confused.
So, looking forward to the weekend very briefly. Sean, you are Arsenal away at Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Chris's team are going to... How do you think they're going to perform against Chris's team?
Well, they've got Robert Pires now, so they've got a chance. I don't know. Great answer for you there. We needed a massive performance last night and we didn't get one, so I think if we don't win at the weekend, then I think Arsenal fans might just implode. So I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
We have no team. Even our young team that's been surprising the likes of Man United lately are injured. Mark Albrighton's out with appendicitis.
I heard you were going to play.
I'm not far off, probably. Yeah. Even though we seem to have these young players who can come up and actually do a job on the big teams, they're just not there at the moment. We haven't got any kind of a team. The defence isn't really doing what it can.
That's an away win for me.
I think so. I'd love to say that our team's going to perform like it did against Man United, but even half of those players are injured now.
So Sean reckons that Arsenal are going to lose. You reckon that Aston Villa are going to lose. So what, 0-0 then?
No. I hope we will win, because if we don't, I can't imagine what's going to happen.
I'll be pleased if Arsenal's score isn't on the video printer in letters.
I don't think it's particularly a good time to play Arsenal. From Villa's point of view, having lost two matches in a row.
Yeah.
And he did make seven changes last night, didn't he?
We are massively
and
vulnerable,
we don't,
I think.
Unlike Villa, that was our story last season. We were always injured and we don't really have many injuries now. So, and even Aaron Ramsey's back now. He played for the reserves yesterday.
Yeah. How long's Fabregas out for, though? He got injured last night, didn't he?
I think they reckon 2-3 weeks, which is quite short by Arsenal standards.
Indeed. Looking through elsewhere, probably the most entertaining game, I think, of the weekend might well be Bolton against Blackpool. I'm looking forward to that one, very much so. Ollie, last to finish off on, let's go to Tottenham-Liverpool this weekend.
Let's do that.
Tottenham, notorious for a bit of a European hangover. My Liverpool supporting friend, Chris White, who's been on the pod a few times, is actually genuinely convinced Liverpool might actually win this one. And he's not necessarily an optimistic Liverpool fan.
It's really difficult. After European games, we tends to be a bit after Lord Mez show for Tottenham, or it has been after the Inter Milan sort of two games, definitely. I would imagine that being quite a dreary draw, actually.
I agree.
I don't see Spurs as being particularly dynamic on the back of playing three games in a week. Liverpool are not going to bang three or four goals past you. I mean, they could edge it at 1-0, and we could edge it. It's really a bit of a toss of a coin, that one, I think.
Indeed. Right. Well, we'll leave it there, because we've got a lot more to get through the pod. We're going to help ourselves to a mince pie and some more Haribo. Chris kindly brought that in as well. And then we'll be back with some MLS and some Champions League. So, welcome back to part two of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. MLS season is now at an end. The Colorado Rapids securing a 2-1 victory over FC Dallas. Chris, last week you said your heart said Dallas, your head said Colorado. Your head was right.
Yes, it was. I'm not that pleased about it, really. I've quite enjoyed watching Dallas this season. It would have been nice to see them get some reward for that. But I think Colorado were the stronger team of the two. I wasn't surprised at all by the result. And no surprise to see it go to extra time either, because they were quite evenly matched.
So, testing Ollie's knowledge of MLS, were Colorado worthy winners?
Yes, they were, actually. It wasn't a great game, apparently. The pitch in Toronto is not really conducive to passing football. And it was a real, really freezing evening up in Canada. Dallas went 1-0 up. And then, Colorado scored two of the worst goals you'll ever see, if you've seen them, like really ugly, scrappy goals. But they're both quite scrappy teams who weren't expected to get even that far. So, fair play to the Rapids. Everyone expected perhaps a Galaxy Red Bulls dream final with Beckham against Henry. But what we had was more like a proper football match. Not particularly glamorous football match or even high quality football match, but still kind of absorbing.
Chris, how did Ollie do?
Very well. Very impressed.
I mean, but for the seventh best team in the regular season to go on and win the title, perhaps, I mean, that wouldn't wash in this country, but obviously the playoff system is quite well kind of worn in American sports, so it's just the way they do it.
Well, I was going to actually ask Chris on that, and I'll bring in a question that we've had from Just Football on Twitter. It said, what's been the reaction to the MLS Cup final from US bloggers and the media in general?
I haven't seen all of it, but it's been fairly mixed. The game itself wasn't great, as Ollie said, and there's as well as the Galaxy Red Bulls issue, the league probably quietly wanted that to be the game, and a lot of the media would have done as well. To be perfectly frank, the media response has probably been nil, but the bloggers are discussing the way MLS works at the moment and the playoffs and the single table and all of those issues, because there's so much wrong about Colorado winning the league this year. Finished, as Ollie said, seventh, if you put it into a single table, fifth in the West, went on to win the Eastern Conference because of the way that the playoffs work over there. And Real Salt Lake finished single table eighth last year and went on to win. Both of them lost more games than they won. I'm not sure that Colorado did, but they won less than half of their games this season. So it's kind of up for discussion whether reform is needed. MLS is not going to get rid of playoffs. The playoffs are going to have 10 teams in them next year. Not sure how that's going to work yet. They may jig the conferences around, but the single table doesn't look like it's on the cards either. So there is going to be change. You know, MLS next year is going to be way different, because the teams up in the Pacific Northwest are going to bring more of a football atmosphere to things.
And changes for the better or not?
Should be for the better. I mean, the big one for me is that the focus on youth football and youth development is gradually increasing. The academy player limit is now gone. They can bring through as many players as they want, which obviously, you know, over time, in theory, that will detract from the drafting system. And they are bringing back the reserve league for them to play in. So, you know, they're welcoming the idea of maybe reforming the divisions, which absolutely needs to be done in some way. Keeping the playoffs, I don't mind the playoffs. The playoffs are fine, as well, the way Americans work. They can't just completely ignore where they are. And it works. And I think that most realists would accept that Colorado, Real Salt Lake, teams like this are going to win the league over there. And that's fine. I don't see a particular problem with that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting, because there's 34 games next season. They haven't decided whether that's going to be a balanced schedule yet. as far as I'm aware. So it could be back to slight weirdness of teams playing each other three times or only once over the season. If I were putting money on it, I'd say it would be balanced. I hope it is, because I think that's more important than getting rid of the playoffs.
Looking at as a general overview of the season, compared to the last season, it doesn't seem to have generated quite so much excitement. You had the playoffs pretty much sorted several weeks in advance. As Ollie said, the final wasn't particularly brilliant. The quality maybe hasn't been there. Is what's the kind of general reaction been when you look back over the season? Do you think it's been a good season for MLS? Bad season? Indifferent?
Pretty much indifferent, I think. The reaction itself has been almost non-existent in terms of a retrospective of the league, and I think that tells its own story. Last season, the final four playoff places went right down to the wire, I think, and Salt Lake just snuck in at the very end. This time, I mean, it was all done and dusted by the last week, and pretty much 3 weeks before, the seven spots were all filled. Haven't been that many moments of excitement. I think last year probably there were some better goals, there were some bigger games, bigger scores last year. There were some sort of 6-0s and 6-3s all over the place. I think if you were to compare the two seasons, 2009 would just about come on top, but it happens in football. They'll have a great season next season and we'll forget how sort of quiet this one's been.
A quick bit of MLS to Premier League news. Haven't Everton got a player on trial from Seattle whose name I've temporarily forgotten?
Steve Sakowani.
Oh, yes, and he's the Ivorian who grew up in London.
He's Congolese.
Congolese, nearly right.
He came through the... Terrible, how could you? Came through the Arsenal youth system, has battled with a couple of personal issues to get his career back on track, but he's a cracking player and he may well be good enough for the Premier League in time. He's not.
He can't
now
be any worse than Jermaine Bedford.
No, he's not. He's a very nippy, skillful winger. End product is sort of iffy at times, but I'm sure he'll get there. And he has spoken about the England team at times. I mean, not I'm definitely going to do it, but he's been asked on occasion whether he would play for DR Congo or for England, and he hasn't. He's sort of sat on the fence on it, but it's not completely out of the realms of possibility that he will have that decision to make at some point.
Early 20s.
Yeah, not exactly sure. I would say about 22, 23.
Would Seattle miss him if he went to England?
Yeah, big time.
He's their key forward.
Yeah. Really. So they've got these in. They attack in numbers, Seattle, and they've got Blaise Cuffo as well. And between the two of them, Freddie Montero and you know, kind of a bit more of a revolving door on the other side. San Aniassi's been doing it lately, but they're not that big fans of him. But their four up front this season and last season have been their real strength.
Okay. Right, well, we'll leave MLS there for another season. And we might pick up on bits and pieces of news that comes across from the States in 2011. But until that time, hope you've enjoyed our MLS chat. And do feel, if you've got any MLS questions, do fire them. I'm sure Chris would absolutely love to pick them up in the new year. So let's move over, staying vaguely exotic and foreign, Tuesday's Champions League games. For anybody listening, we're recording on a Wednesday, so anything we say about tonight's games, which kick off in about 15 minutes, will be utterly and totally irrelevant. So last night, Sean, sorry to keep asking you about Arsenal's losses. There's a theme here, but does Arsene Wenger have a point with his rages against the officials following the Gunners' loss to Braga last night?
Yes, he does. We can't blame the loss on it because we shouldn't have then conceded two goals, but the penalty was the penalty call was as blatant as I've ever seen, I think. I don't know what those extra two officials are doing there, but I mean, even at the Emirates, when we've won 5-0, 6-0, I remember thinking, what are you doing? I can see better than you and you're getting it wrong.
That was almost an Ian Holloway type round. So all you needed was a West Country accent.
Sort your life out.
Even in...
You're not from the West Country.
There you go.
I'm the only one who isn't, aren't I?
But I'm not from the West Country. Don't put me in with the rest of this lot.
It's an honour.
Sorry, Sean. Moving back from
I've
West
lost
Country.
My rant now.
That's quite all right. I think that's a completely our fault for doing that.
It was definitely a penalty.
It was definitely a penalty.
Yes. Okay. Although when he first went down from far away, we never seem to get him in Europe now, unless we're 4-0 up, because I think possibly because it's still the Eduardo dive, or that's what the commentator said, and I quite agreed with him, but. Yeah, you can't blame him for anything other than that call because we shouldn't have then conceded two very late on goals.
I mean, I didn't actually see the game. I was watching Harry Potter last night instead. Why is everybody looking at me? It was booked a long time ago. Shut up. I didn't see the game. So, Arsenal, I mean, was that a fair scoreline? I mean, was it a good game, bad game?
A pretty terrible game, actually. We dominated in the first half possession. It was 67-33 or something. Does that make 100? Yeah. And just none of our passes were working. Then Cesc went off injured, and he gestured that he needed to go off injured. It just all went wrong. Nicholas Bentner's positioning was pretty bad. I mean, the spotlight was quite rightly on him after his comments a couple of weeks ago. And I'm a massive Bentner fan, and even I was like, what are you doing? After the match, Johan Djuru said that it was a wake-up call for Arsenal. I think they've had enough wake-up calls this season. So that's why I really think we'll win on Saturday, because they can't not. But, I don't think we deserve to lose 2-0, because Braga weren't that good, but we didn't deserve to get anything from the game.
Well, obviously, it all comes down to the last game, and you've got Partizans. Partizan at home, who've yet to get a point. Shakhtar Donetsk, who top the league at the moment, have Braga. On paper, it would seem that you are through, but I mean, we've seen Arsenal getting complacent before. We've talked about the Spurs game at the weekend, where perhaps a bit of complacency in there. How tough a test is that to you?
It would have been great if we could have, last match, not even this match, made sure that we qualified, but we're doing it the Arsenal way yet again and leaving it right down to the wire. But I mean, I don't think there's any way we're not going to qualify. I believe that we're definitely going through to the next round, because I always believe like that. But I think that should be another win, but then yesterday should have been. So that's the thing with Arsenal these days, you never know which side's going to turn up.
Mm. The only thing I'd worry about from Arsenal's perspective is the fact is, even if they do win and Shakhtar win, they're going to be second in the league. And looking through these tables at the moment, they've got either Real Madrid, Barca, Lyon, Bayern Munich, all possible first qualifying round opponents after that. They're going to have a tough game.
Absolutely. The other English team, Chris, they came back from, Jelena, who went 1-0 up, and then Chelsea came back, a couple of goals, Sturridge and Malouda on there. They needed that win, didn't they, even if it was a slightly different team than we'd normally see Chelsea put out?
Yeah, they did confirm top spot with that win. Fairly routine stuff, I would say. You know, they got a bit of a shock, which they occasionally do down there, and then just steamrolled their way back into it. A couple of routine goals. Florian Malouda's always going to do a decent job, and help them to the win there. Three sort of valuable points. They're top of the table. They've got nothing to worry about in their next game.
And Marseille aren't totally through yet, but I think, like, from what I've heard, especially from French people, they've impressed. I mean, they got a 3-0 win away at Moscow, which is fantastic, and obviously destroying Jelena as well away. They could be slightly dark horses, difficult for anybody who picks them up in the draw.
Yeah, they could be. I know nothing of Marseille, but we've had a couple of guests on this season who really focus on Ligue 1, and they're saying that Marseille, despite, you know, not quite being on the top, are probably going to win the league, and their results in Europe paint a picture as well. They should be fine. I certainly wouldn't fancy them in the next round, judging by some of the things I've been told about them.
Where else should we go? Let's go to Ollie. Roma, Bayern Munich on there. Bayern losing, Roma with a fairly impressive comeback there to win 3-2.
Yeah, that's the one match I didn't see, actually.
Oh, cheers. You said, ask me anything about Champions League. You're fine
no,
on MLS.
Was it Borriello and Totti and Di Rossi scored for Roma? Were they 2-0 down? Is that right?
Yep, 2-0 down. Mario Gomez double.
Yeah, it sounds like... I saw bits of it. It sounds like one of the most exciting matches around. I can't really see Roma or Bayern or even Marseille being good enough to go all the way in the Champions League, but... they're all good teams who'll give the likes of Real Madrid. I mean, it's all about Real Madrid, isn't it? Mourinho's Real Madrid, the Champions League this season, as far as I can see.
Well, let's go to Real Madrid, defeating Ajax 4-0. But obviously, the big talking point from there is the two red cards that Madrid picked up for Xabi Alonso and Sergio Ramos. Both for time wasting, both rules them out of a dead rubber.
Yeah, convenient red cards, rather. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, you can't really prove they were deliberate, but they were obviously fishy. Xabi Alonso's was ridiculous.
A little dance he was doing.
If you've seen it, he was doing a little, just sort of quick step foxtrot with the ball, but sort of dancing up to it as if he was going to kick it, and then looking at the ref to see if the ref was going to book him, then then dancing back and going, you know, if I'd been the ref and I was watching that, I'd have just waited and waited and waited.
They were both absolutely blatant. There was no question mark over this at all.
But having said that, they're exploiting perhaps a loophole in the rules. I mean, what they did is within the rules, and every team will look to, you know, what they did was sensible in a way, if not particularly in the spirit of the game. But because it's Mourinho and it's kind of pantomime villain sort of stuff, everyone's like, ooh. But I'm sure most teams have, you know, I heard that reserve, in this country, reserve games used to count for yellow cards. They used to play on a rival podcast which won't be mentioned here. I actually heard this, that reserve games back in the day in the English League used to count in terms of the cards. Actually, no, it was Glenn Hoddle.
Sending off still.
Glenn Hoddle talking about. Yeah, so if you played in a reserve game and you picked up a card, that was then kind of valid for the whole. So they used to play players in the reserves. They'd get a booking, they'd come off. So it's nothing new. Beckham's done it before, obviously, got himself booked deliberately. So it just adds to the sort of Real Madrid sense of pantomime, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
That it was so obvious, even Ramos shaking the referee's hand.
Yeah, to shake the ref's
hand. But I mean, if you'd been Ajax, you'd be. I mean, they were asking for them to be sent off because they obviously had
Luis
done their
Suarez,
homework,
wasn't it? Who was just desperately remonstrating with the referee to send them off.
It's nice to see that Ajax's ban on Luis Suarez for biting an opponent at the weekend hasn't actually extended to the Champions League.
Oh, is it seven game
domestic Eredivisie
ban?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see him?
I did see him bite an opponent. It was Tyson-esque.
He went for the shoulder, didn't he?
Yeah, vampiric.
What is it with Martignol and having players doing that?
When
Jermaine Defoe against West Ham beat Mascherano.
Oh, was that? I thought it was the other way around.
No.
Was it Mascherano biting Defoe? No?
Definitely.
I remember the incident. I remember Mascherano definitely overreacting to it.
Mm. But Yol's reaction in the press was that it's okay because he only had a bit of a nibble.
Yeah, trying to bite another player.
I mean, Real Madrid won't get punished by UEFA. I wouldn't have thought.
Should they be, like, Sean?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it's like you said, it is Mourinho and it's clever. And I just think that if it was another team, that they'd be slaughtered for it, don't you think? I mean, yeah, I don't think they should be punished for it. But the way that they made it so obvious, it was just so arrogant and so.
I think you're right.
Could do this.
If Chelsea had done it, Platini would be sniffing around going.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps because we're British, we feel like we're victimised a bit by UEFA. But Real will get away with it.
And elsewhere in the group, Chris, Milan secured their passage through.
It's decent form, Milan, top of Serie A, and doing well in Europe as well. I think I've said in other shows that Milan are going to win the league and get to the Champions League final. So I'm quite happy with that.
That's a big shout. I haven't seen this, but I've heard Ibrahimovic scored an absolute cracker. Anybody confirm that at all?
He hoofed it. It was kind of a 1-2 that didn't quite work out, and then it rolled into his path and he was running onto it and he absolutely twatted it into the net. Not in the top corner or anything, he just hoofed it. And then there's a shot of Ronaldinho wearing a woolly hat on the sidelines, clapping like a bit of a special needs child.
Who came on and scored?
Huh?
He
scored, didn't he?
He scored a really nice goal, yeah. Reminiscent of his goal against Chelsea where he sort of fainted with his sort of kicking leg and then just curled it round into the bottom corner.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll leave it there for Champions League. Mm. I know, that's my moving on voice.
Yeah, I thought it was. We've had enough of this Champions League nonsense.
Indeed, let's go down the lower leagues, as far down as we can go. Obviously, I don't think anybody's really got much to say against Bars versus Cluj. So, tonight's Champions League game, some interesting stuff, obviously a bit irrelevant for us to talk about it on there, but should be very fascinating indeed. Okay, part three is all over the place, literally, but then you'd really expect nothing from us, dear listener, after listening to the first two parts. We'll be chatting about the World Cup vote and FIFA, Inter Milan, Cardiff City, and taking a brief peek through the transfer window. And that's coming up in just a moment. Part three of the Two for the Tackle podcast. A listener emails. Ben Schaaf, otherwise known as Kyers de Sport on Twitter, says, "Hello, gents. Just listened to your latest episode on my way home. Excellent stuff as ever. Thank you very much, Ben. On flares, we had a discussion about flares, the not the trouser kind. We obviously had a discussion about that as well, but also the flares on the terraces. On flares, I would agree that they are wonderful to behold, capable of lighting up the dullest of games, as it were. However, there was an example of their dark side in Portugal this weekend, in what was an otherwise uneventful 1-0 win for Sporting in their Taça de Portugal fourth-round tie with Paços de Ferreira. Some poor sod lost three fingers as a result of an errant flare, so caution is advised. That's us told, really, on there. Actually kind of reminds me a little bit of... this isn't quite on the same level. This is how Britain differs from the continent in terms of throwing things. During games, I was at a game, Exeter City against Gravesend and Northfleet, as it was back in the day, and we had some of the Exeter yobs had turned out for the game, which isn't very common. We have rubbish hooligans, and this is why. They tried to throw some chips onto the pitch at the goalkeeper, and the wind blew it back in their face.
Broken Britain.
Yeah. This is a difference between Portugal. You lose three fingers. In Britain, you get chips in the face.
Or in Italy, you throw a moped off second tier of the stadium.
I've always wondered how
smuggling a moped into a stadium, yeah.
And the pig's head.
And the pig's head for the Clasico.
Yeah, Barcelona, yeah. Real Madrid.
What? Italy is probably mental.
It was thrown at Luis Figo after he moved from Barcelona to Real Madrid. The Barcelona fans threw as he was going to take a corner.
How did they get it in the stadium?
I think they disguised it as, I don't know. we just bring in this pig, dead pig.
Which team was it recently threw garden furniture on the pitch? It might have even been in England. I don't know.
Oh, was it Adebayor?
Yes, Arsenal fans.
Arsenal fans at Eastlands, wasn't it?
Yes,
very. That was just a little yeah, I think they were the ball boy stalls or something. And he came over to celebrate and they went nutty.
Was there a point in that, or was it just because they were...
That was when he celebrated in our faces.
Yeah, when he ran the
When he ran the length of the pitch, someone chucked a roll at him and someone else threw a stool.
I think that's a wonderfully British way of doing things, isn't it? It's
garden furniture and a roll.
Best of British. Anyway, right, let's move on to other topics, not garden furniture. Caution advised. Next one, FIFA. Chris, TFT lawyers, standing by?
Yes, you are.
Excellent. Right. We shall continue. So, as you should all know by now, next week is the announcement of which countries will be hosting the 2018 and the 2022 World Cup. The process, however, has been hit by allegations of corruption, and FIFA has suspended two officials, Amos Adamu and Reynolds Tamari, after they were filmed by the Sunday Times, allegedly accepting money in return for votes. It's a very murky business. The vote is next week. We will find out if England has the World Cup. Lee, do you think this is undermined the integrity of the World Cup vote?
What, just this or the whole entire process?
Well, I think both, I think, is a fairly valid question on that.
It was always going to be like this. Every FIFA vote I can ever seem to remember has been like this, with allegations being thrown about. We were discussing before we started recording that you said about how you thought the 2018-2022, should they have been voted together? Well, it's quite clear they shouldn't be, because people are talking about like colluding now, like, oh, we'll vote for you on this one so you can vote for us on this one and all this sort of stuff. If you look at the base of things, England should be the favourite or very close to being the favourite, and it's very unlikely we're going to get it now. I can't see it, because if you're basing it on how the press have said things and all this sort of stuff, because even though I agree with the pressure laid off and just not done anything about it, because, you know, it's going to cause problems that don't need to be caused at times, but they've shown that corruption, and they've shown like how money can change hands and so on and so forth, and how bent the whole process is, you know. And now they're saying, oh, because you've shown that, you know, it's a bad thing. Well, it's not a bad thing, because we just showed how the whole we just got rid of, according to this, I know it's allegedly, but two people that were going to accept money for votes.
It's a fair point. Chris, I know you've been very, very critical of FIFA in the past. We have, obviously, the FIFA, when they came out and they suspended these two officials, launched into a very big rant against the Sunday Times. I can't remember who the FIFA official was who launched into that. But FIFA do seem to be taking this very badly. I mean, is that fair from FIFA's point of view for attacking the media?
Well, no, it's not. But think about what FIFA is and what FIFA means, and whether they're going to want to spend 6.5-7 years under the spotlight of the English media, which is what is laying ahead of them if they go for an England World Cup in 2018. They're not going to fancy it. I agree with Lee. I think we should be absolutely nailed on for this tournament, to be honest, and I don't think we're going to get it. And look, the questions are there as to why that might be.
Why do you think we should be nailed on? Best facilities?
Or even just ready facilities,
every ground would be full.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time.
Global TV market is
Spain
the right
had it
times.
In 82, didn't they?
We don't have to build any new... I know we're doing building new stadiums. We don't actually have to build... We've got enough new stadiums as it is. Yeah. So even if we didn't build anything, we could still hold a World Cup, quite simply.
Interestingly, I think there is at least one team, and very much one or two more, who are very financially dependent on this World Cup vote in England.
In England?
Yes, at least one team, I think, would be in serious problems if they don't get the World Cup.
Do you know, can you say who they are? Or you just, you've heard...
Plymouth would probably be one of them.
Plymouth would be struggling, wouldn't they?
Yes. Bristol City as well. Like, got a new
I think the one in Bristol, yeah, Bristol.
Yeah. But Plymouth, very, very pegged onto that. Can't say too much more on that, but I think that keep an eye on the West Country if England don't get the vote down there. Going back to it, Chris... should the media be reporting on this kind of stuff in the run-up to the vote?
Personally, I'd prefer they didn't, but yeah, why not? That's what they're there for. We get so much trash in our press on football and otherwise that people either don't or shouldn't give a toss about. This stuff is really important to a huge number of people, and this is the body that is supposedly running the game cleanly, and I think it's...
Well,
it's,
if English football fans and football clubs shouldn't be punished because our media... is scrutinous media that's looking into a corrupt organisation, an example of a corrupt organisation, obviously. But I mean, FIFA, I don't think any of us has got time for FIFA particularly.
Well, there was an interesting quote in Owen Gibson's piece in The Guardian, said that FIFA would privately FIFA acknowledged they would prefer Russia with its crackdown on the media compared to England in their free press, which to me tells me you all you need to know.
It's a joke
about
because
this.
Like what part of it, I didn't on the list of like a World Cup requirements, certain amount of stadiums, certain amount of hotels, I didn't see how good is your media and how much does it scrutinise FIFA,
how racist yeah. your supporters
yeah, exactly yeah.
I don't have it in Kim Jong-il's back garden or in China. I mean
well, exactly.
I mean I would like to see Russia get it from the point of view that they're a big country, big football country that's never had it. But I think England should have it over Spain.
They're a legitimate contender. I think England over Spain. Russia are legitimate contenders. But for me, the problems that they have at the moment should give us the edge.
Well, after South Africa and Brazil, I think it's fair to say that FIFA want a World Cup that's guaranteed to get full stadiums. They're not going to have to put any more money into at the last minute.
Generate lots of money as
which
well.
They had to do to South Africa. It's going to generate a hell of a lot of money. I mean, England is the obvious place to have the 2018
World
Cup.
Who do you think will get it then?
I still think England could sneak it. I think there's a will there for England to have it, despite all the stuff that's being said, and I still think we'll sneak it, actually.
I'd be surprised and delighted. Mm-hmm.
You know what really, really sticks in the craw for me? In
Haribo.
That too, and possibly the mince pies as well. But no, what really sticks in the craw for me watching this is seeing the front pages of the sports papers taken up with Jack Warner. Basically say, you know, him, the vice president of FIFA, CONCACAF president, basically saying, you know, I believe England should be doing this, you should be inviting me to lunches, the gifts that we've been given are not good enough. And the media is reporting them as if this is a man, obviously it is a man who everything hangs on, they're reporting as if this is a man who's white and white. He is not. There's some very, very dodgy stuff that goes on around Jack Warner.
Allegedly.
And to see that type of man holding the keys and pretty much, you know, that's not an exaggeration. His votes count so badly. And to see that kind of man as the person who holds the power and whether a country gets the World Cup or not, I think it's absolutely disgraceful.
It's depressing and it's infuriating. I think of all the people in football who aren't players or managers, Jack Warner's the one who would make me angrier. Just thinking about Jack Warner makes me angry, actually.
I can advise people to look at Andrew Jennings' site, Transparency in Sport, if you want to find out more about Jack Warner. He's done more research than we have.
He's involved in Panorama, isn't he?
He is involved in Panorama, I believe, as well, yes. What do people think about the Panorama show? Should it be going out before or should it be going out afterwards? My opinion is that...
Put it out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've already gone halfway there, so we might as well go to
Yeah, they
know
it exists now, so...
Yeah. The rubber glove is on. You might as well...
Yeah.
I mean, do people think it's a good thing? It would be a good thing if England got the World Cup. Do you want the England World Cup here, or do you think it would be better to actually go, right, well, FIFA are clearly there's problems there. Would you rather see FIFA clean up their act, or would you rather see the World Cup come to England?
I would sooner FIFA cleaned up their act. I think everyone would, but... Wait, I mean, it all depends on 2 years' time. We'll see how we can handle, well, how London at least can handle the Olympics. If it, unfortunately, the vote's not after that, because either that could go well in our favour or well against our favour. But, yeah, I would like to see it here, wouldn't everyone?
Yeah, because I was only very young at the time, but I remember the country very vividly around Euro 96 and how fantastic that whole entire summer was. So just to have that again, even bigger in the World Cup, would be fantastic. Mm. But I just can't see it. I think... I get the feeling they'll go for the easy route and go Portugal and Spain.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm. And 2022, very briefly, Chris, do you think that's going to go to the USA?
I'm kind of undecided.
Yes.
I'd like it to. I think they've got a very, very strong bid. I've just got a sneaking suspicion that Australia are in with a shout. It's TV times that will go against Australia, if anything.
What about Qatar, Ollie?
Qatar have paid some big money to... pull in some...
Have you seen the stadiums they've been building?
Yeah.
Jesus, some of the stuff they've been, like, just... some of the... Whether they actually make it is another thing, but just some of the stuff just, like, incredible.
Yeah, I don't have anything against, per se, anything against Qatar getting it. I think the States is probably where it's going to end up, just because of the TV market and the money that can be made from it.
It could be huge for American football. It really could. I mean, USA 94 was a big deal. But
and if you think about the state of the game in 94 when they had it there.
Yeah. There was no game.
Yeah, I mean...
No, it was all
the thought of there being a grassroots and a kind of much more of a structure to build a World Cup on. I just think... I mean, Bill Clinton wrote a piece in Sports Illustrated saying... writing about all the benefits of bringing the World Cup back to the States. And I just think there's going to be some powerful lobbyists there, a lot of money behind the USA bid. Australia would do a great job. I mean, we saw from the Sydney Olympics that... Mm. They can hold a great tournament, but like you said, TV times is perhaps the big issue there.
Mm, and I think for Qatar, not just the fact that it'd be ridiculously hot during the time it's played, but also the key player is actually not involved in that, and that is China. Because there's very strong rumours that China might be going for 2026. And if they're going, they won't want to do... Or FIFA probably wouldn't want to do two Asian tournaments in a row.
Qatar won't get it.
And China is a much bigger audience, potentially.
But I find it funny that the American team members of the American bid have been having a go at Qatar's bid, trying to undermine it, saying it's going to be ridiculously hot, like 40, 50 degrees. When you think back to Jack Charlton in his white baseball cap going, get the water onto my pasty ginger Irish lads. I mean, it was fiercely hot in USA 94. Fiercely hot. It was like really, really one of the hottest summers they've had. But Qatar won't get it.
No. Mm.
Okay, right. Well, that's FIFA toll. If you're listening, Sepp Blatter, that's two for the tackle's opinion. And let's have a quick roundup, a quick look at what else has been making the news. Let's go to Italy. Ollie, Inter Milan, losing again to Chievo this time, no less. Rafa Benitez under pressure. That's a familiar story. Are you surprised?
Not really, because it was a lose-lose job to take in the first place, wasn't it? I mean, Inter won the treble last season. They had Mourinho. They had this kind of George Clooney-esque glamorous manager who brings nothing but trophies to every team he manages. So to go in and follow that is like trying to follow that dude on the X Factor.
Wagner.
It's like trying to follow Wagner on the X Factor. It's a no-win situation.
I love the fact that blank looks mostly around there.
And yet everyone knew it was Wagner I was talking about.
I thought it was Matt.
Oh, Matt.
I don't watch it.
Oh no, you don't watch it.
I have no idea who these people are.
So he's on a bit of a hiding to nothing, taking the job, and he's not really stamped his mark. He's not really made his mark on the team yet. He's moved Eto into the middle and played him through the middle with some success, but he's had a lot of injuries to contend with as well. There's been a lot of players from the Champions League winning team that haven't been playing for him.
I know Chris has talked about Cambiasso being very, very key.
He's a great... Cambiasso's really underrated. I mean, who knows how far they'd have got if they'd had him at the World Cup, Cambiasso. Not taking Cambiasso was a crazy omission, and Zanetti didn't go either. So I'd like to see Rafa back in the Premier League because he gives good copy, doesn't he? He's incredibly entertaining. And I don't think he'll be at Inter by Christmas. I think they're going to get rid of him.
Mm.
I don't think his face fits in Italy, really.
They've got a window to get Spalletti as well at the moment, as we were discussing last week.
Mm, yeah.
So he's got a long time to wait now for Champions League football after winning the Russian Premier League.
Yeah, so true.
I was going to ask Sean, do you rate Rafa as a manager at all?
No, not really, no. Why, do you?
No.
No, good.
Do you not?
Well, he's a bit tactically naive at times, and he chops and chains a lot.
He's stubborn. I think that's probably one of his biggest failings. But like, I think Wenger's stubborn. That's one of his biggest failings.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind him at West Ham. There you go.
Well, you take Benitez at West Ham.
I'd take pretty much anyone at West Ham at this moment in time.
Paolo Di Canio.
Honestly, I'd rather have Alan Pardew as manager right now. Bring him back.
I thought you said Alan Partridge.
Well, actually, no, even him as well.
The two Alans in tandem, Pardew and Kerbishley. And Partridge. Wow. Three Allens.
Partridge, Kovacic, and
Hanson and Shearer.
It's the dream team. Five Allens.
I'm there. I'm protesting outside the gates now.
Yeah, what about Shearer? Shearer reckons Capello's got a bit to learn, and then he got Newcastle.
Alan Shearer's
relegated.
In
no, yeah, exactly.
A position of strength. So talk about anything apart from elbowing people in the head and kicking the ball very hard.
Just staying on Italy briefly, did anybody see Zlatan Ibrahimovic's goal celebration for AC Milan at the weekend? No, it was brilliant. He jumped up, he celebrated, he punched the air so hard that he injured his elbow.
Yeah. Going back to Inter Chievo, Samu Letu was not sent off for headbutting a Chievo player in the chest. Like, and this was on a weekend when Serie A was celebrating Zinedine Zidane, so it was kind of
the irony there.
But I think Gattuso's going to pick up a ban.
He's been banned. I'm not sure how long, but
three matches, I would guess. But yeah.
Do you want a quick mention of Napoli, Chris?
Yeah, all right.
Napoli.
That'll do. Yes, third in the table. Very,
Bologna.
Very inconsistent, but kind of getting away with it at the moment. Good win against Bologna. A couple of goals for Hamdik. Another one for Cavani.
Is that your
brilliant
second
to watch.
Team, Napoli?
Yeah, well, one of many. They change order. great to watch because they're terrible at times and brilliant at times and usually in the same match. So they're just, if
they
you get a chance to watch
they
them,
they won't keep Cavani for long, will they?
No. Nah.
Nor Hamdik.
Has he been there for quite a while?
Hamdik's just signed a new deal as well.
Has he?
Yeah, 2015, I think it was still. And Cavani's shown no signs of particularly wanting to move, but if someone big enough comes along, which they probably will. But, you know, they seem to be doing okay because Lovetzi's been on the move for ages and he's still there.
I don't think Cavani would fit in the Premier League.
I think Hamdik would be, though. I think Hamdik would be perfect for the Premier League.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think he'd shoot right. I think he'd play well in a good.
Alongside Scott Parker.
Do you know, we were linked with him when we first got Zola in. That never happened. But talking of ex-West Ham players now playing in Italy, I saw Diamanti scored an absolutely fantastic goal for Brescia the other week. He did. He was bent over outside of his left foot against Juve in a 1-1 draw.
Decent,
very talented player, but
very inconsistent.
Yeah, very inconsistent.
Wonderful stuff. Where else should we go? A very, very brief look at the Championship. I just wanted to quickly mention Cardiff as well, because they've... Well, I mean, they had that brilliant run, running to the top of there. A couple of internationals up front, yet went down to Nottingham Forest. It's fascinating up the top. Has anybody been watching the Championship at all?
I saw bits of it. I saw the Cardiff City-Swansea game the other week on BBC, and Cardiff looked abysmal. It's quite. I look at the top six in that table. It looks very 1970s, doesn't it? Queen's Park Rangers, Swansea, Derby County, Leeds, Nottingham Forest.
It does, doesn't it? Did anybody see Lewis McGugan's goal for Forest at the weekend?
Yeah,
another. He's scored a few screamers this year, hasn't he?
He has indeed.
He can't be very old, Lewis McGugan. I think he's that old.
He's about 21, 22.
Yeah, early 20s. Definitely.
He scored a better goal than that earlier in the season as well, but it was a fantastic goal against Cardiff.
Absolutely. QPR. I mean, it's so tough to call. Which teams would actually... I'll just throw this out there. Which teams would people most like to see up from the Championship? Just ignoring form, but those top six.
If we stayed up, QPR, Forest.
Yeah, QPR.
I'd really like to... Forest is a club I've always had a lot of time for. I think they're a good club.
Why QPR for you, Sean? Neil Warnock, the attraction of him coming back?
Did you hear... he did an interview before the Cardiff match, I think, and he was talking about a player on the opposite side, and he was like, if I was playing against him, I'd just kick him.
That sounds
like Neil Warnock. Yeah,
sounds
but
like Neil Warnock.
Hateful man.
I wouldn't like to see Neil Warnock back in the Premier League, but I'd like to see Forest and QPR just because they're good old fashioned.
What about Leeds?
English teams. Yes, I would.
Yeah, Leeds.
I would like to see Leeds back.
I quite like Simon Grayson as well as a manager and a person.
I really like Simon Grayson.
Yeah, he's done a brilliant job, and I think that was played Norwich at the weekend. Good game over there. That was a 1-1 draw. Norwich leads at the weekend. Derby, a bit of dark horses on there as well, given how poor they were last season. But Nigel Clough, every single season, he's made progress with his team, be it Burton Albion or Derby County, which is...
He must have paid attention as a kid, like, to all those times he was in the chairman in the boardroom and on the dugout. His dad used to take him into the dugout, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Nigel Clough. And you know, if you're going to learn from someone, but he's done really well. I wouldn't have put Derby up that high like before the season started.
There's a lot of good young managers in the Championship. Well, I say young managers, unknown managers in the Championship. So like Simon O'Driscoll did a good job at Doncaster over the seasons, and I'm surprised that a lower Premier League club hasn't come in from
Doncaster
somewhere.
Play really good football, mm-hmm. don't they? O'Driscoll's. Is it Sean O'Driscoll?
Yeah. Sean O'Driscoll. Sorry.
Yeah, the Arsenal of that division.
I don't want to heap more misery on Sean by making a comment about how they're the Arsenal of the division, but they do play really nice football. Yeah. Doncaster.
If anybody's seen James Coppinger, is one of their players. He used to play for Exeter, and he's very, very special. Sorry, I brought him because
That's the trifecta. That's the third mention of Exeter in the podcast.
It is. It doesn't happen that.
How
that
do you do it?
I would love it one day for reasons other than how good a manager he is to see Sean O'Driscoll at Villa.
Really.
Also because I think he's a very good manager.
Followed by Eddie Howe, right?
Yeah.
Now, if we're talking Eddie, Bournemouth are still going absolutely great country. We haven't got the League One table in front of us, but nobody was prepared for a bit of League One thing. But hey, let's give Eddie Howe all the love he deserves from there. Let's just have a very quick chat, because I think as we're coming up to January, which is the infamous transfer window, there's probably a few clubs that need to strengthen. Sean, go to you first. Might as well mentioned Arsenal first. Do you think they need strengthen at all? Do you think there's any positions? Because Arsene Wenger's not really one for buying in the middle of the season. I can think of Arshavin, and there's not really been too many others.
Well, at the beginning of the season, I would have said no. Well, I would have said we need a goalkeeper. I don't think we do now. I think up the other end of the pitch, maybe we need another striker, because I think, much as I love him, I think Bentner's not going to be around much longer, to be honest.
Is that really such a big loss?
No, see, people don't understand. He's a good player. He's got a good attitude. He works his arse off.
Sean's gone off Holloway again.
but and even Arsenal fans are like, oh, that's typical Bentner. Do you watch him? I mean, yes, he was rubbish yesterday. But those comments and that car accident that gave him the groin injury, that's really been the death of him, I think. But no, I would love to see him stay at Arsenal, but I don't think he will, so...
Chris, you look like you're about to explode.
I've never met another person who liked Nicholas Bentner.
You like him?
Yes.
I like Nicholas Bentner.
There's two of us.
I hope he isn't at Arsenal for much longer, because I would absolutely love him at Villa. I think he's perfect.
And Bentner up front.
I'm sure he wouldn't fancy that kind of move. But for me...
He thinks he's going up.
Something like
he,
that. So a second-tier club for Nicholas Bentner, he would be a star.
I don't see where Bentner can go apart from down after Arsenal. Yeah. He's not going to go to Barcelona.
Bayern Munich, apparently.
That wouldn't be a bad fit. I can see that. I rate Bentner very highly, but he's not been fit, and he's still young. And
we
see the best of him.
Like the comments that he made, it was in Danish, handily enough, but it came when he said, if I don't get playing time, I'm off. Well, the reason he hadn't had playing time is because he'd been injured. He was literally just back from injury. Chamakh was doing really well. Mm. How would he have had any playing time? So they just seemed to... Then he got, apparently benched for a couple of games. And then he was pretty useless yesterday. And I didn't think he looked like himself either. So, I don't know. I really hope he doesn't go, but...
Probably shows a difference in the teams. But at Villa, he would step into that team and be almost certainly our best player.
But I think he needs to go to a team where he can be one of the bigger fish. Mm. One of the big egos.
I think he'd step up to it as well.
No, no one can deny his talent. He scores hard goals really well, but it's the easy goals sometimes he Fs up.
I think at another club he might get those right as well.
A bit like a better Marlon Harewood. Scores like ridiculous goals, but can't score the easy ones.
That's funny, I was writing a list on whoeltlepies.tv the other...
ka-ching!
Earlier this week, of vainglorious players, and I put Bentner in because he is quite a vain... I don't mind vanity in players at all. I think if you're that good at football, it's inevitable. But I did say in his mind he's perhaps as good as Zlatan, but he's like the white Marlon Harewood. Funny you would mention Marlon Harewood.
That's a good fit.
Yeah, what you said is he's confident, but people will misinterpret that, because if you actually watch these interviews, if you read them, you think, what twat. But if you actually watch them, he doesn't say it in an arrogant way. He thinks he can do it right. A lot of the time he's wrong. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, Thierry Henry, when he was at Arsenal, if he'd have been like, oh no, I don't think I could do it, what kind of striker would that be?
I think the point is with Bentner, he just doesn't shut up. He'll talk to anyone. He'll always talk to you.
He's a good interview. Like, the reason he's interviewed so much is because he's a good interviewer, I think. So, but he obviously shoots himself in the foot by running his mouth a little bit too much.
Just very quickly, seeing as we're talking about strengthening, you mentioned Villa there. That probably one of the most obvious Premier League squads that could do with a bit of strengthening in January. Who would you like to see come in?
I think Bentner's the obvious one. It's or someone of his quality in that position. That's where we miss out quite a lot.
He's
having someone up front. No, thank you. For someone who's had a pretty piss poor career, for him to have had his worst ever season for us, he was hated at Villa because he was such a lazy.
Benny sucker. McCarthy, we've got plenty of them. We can give you plenty of big strikers.
No, thanks. I can't see our board doing business with you lot.
That's true.
But yeah, I think that's our main position. I probably would like to see us bring a goalkeeper in at some point. I don't necessarily think January's the time for that. And I think a lot of the other issues are down to injuries and down to possibly slight selection disagreements I would have with Julio. So I think it would be good to strengthen all over generally, but I think that striker is the position that we really need to attack.
Okay, well, I think we'll leave it there because it's turned into a bumper pod, really. For you, dear listener, I hope you've enjoyed your time in studio. We will be back in 2011 in perhaps maybe a slightly different format, slightly different sound quality as well. Who knows where we'll be? Who knows where we'll turn up? We will even be mobile. We might even make it down to Tooting and Mitcham to record a pod, quite possibly.
I think that would be a very good idea.
Except the weekend. I actually went down to Tooting the weekend. They were hammered 5-0 by Carl Shulton.
It would have made a good show, though.
It would have made a wonderful... Well, I don't know. You wouldn't have been particularly speaking. It would have been like Ian Wright after that England defeat where he just went, I don't want to talk about it.
I don't know about you, Gary, but I thought I took it in my stride.
You did. You'd had Bovril at half-time, so you're a happy man. That's good. Okay, right. Reminds me to thank the guests. Ollie, thank you very much. Are you watching any football this weekend?
This weekend, no, I'm not. I'm going to... Paris.
Ah, très bien.
Très bien, oui.
Very nice. Sean, thank you very much. Any football for you this weekend?
All of it, I suppose. it depends on...
Cheer up, you might win Arsenal. Villa.
If we lose, then I won't be watching it for maybe the rest of the year or something. But.
That's a bit extreme.
well, there's only 1 month left, let's be honest.
That's very true. Very true indeed. Lee, thank you very much.
Yeah, you, Gary.
Pardon?
Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks. Any football for you?
I will be in my usual seat in the bottom or lower watching the not-so-mighty West Ham against Wigan.
Wonderful. And Chris, thank you. Thank you for getting this whole thing off the ground. Not that we're finishing at all, but we'll be back in the new year. And where are you off to this weekend, for chance?
Ooh, fancy Colchester.
I love Colchester. I love a bit of Colchester action, me.
FA Cup.
Swindon Supermarine. Wonderful stuff. Do get yourselves down to an FA Cup tie if you've got one around, or even a non-league game as well, because we know how much we like pushing those. A few quick plugs before we go. Justgiving.com/two-footed-tackle. Please do donate generously. We're trying to raise £1,000 for CRY, Cardiac Risk in the Young, before Christmas. Hopefully that'll be a very good Christmas present for them. Very, very worthy cause. If this is our last pod, you know, do us a favour for the year, and please, instead of, I don't know, we don't even charge for it on iTunes, but please do give couple of quid to justgiving.com/two-footed-tackle, twitter.com/two-footed-tackle should you want to give Chris abuse about football during the week or during the rest of the year, facebook.com/two-footed-tackle should you wish to become a fan, podcast@two-footed-tackle.com if you want to email us with more stories about flares or chips or anything like that, and finally www.two-footed-tackle.com for all your latest articles, opinions, angry rants and stuff like that. Currently the thing doing business on there is Chris's thoughts on Match of the Day. Well worth a read, please do go on there. And we'll see you, speak to you, hear you, whatever, in 2011, dear listener. Thank you.
Two-footedtackle.com.